Today I'm talking to Philip Abitabel, a resident of Hudson, who grew up in Hudson, who's also one of the officers of the Sons of Italy Lodge, and was a member of the Lady of Carmel Church in Hudson. We're going to talk a little bit today about Lady of Carmel and Lady of Mount Carmel and the people that founded it. So Phil, you can maybe tell us a little bit about the church.
Well, first I'll tell you a little bit about me. I was born actually on 10 Union Street, which is about as far down as you can get in Hudson to the river. And we moved up to 229 Warren Street when I was two. And I've been there ever since. Our house is still there. My brother and I still own it. But that's where I grew up, and I spent all my years there. The Mount Carmel Church that I know was on the corner of 2nd and Union Street, which is basically around the corner from where I lived. What I recall from my father telling me, my grandparents telling me, that there was a church down on Front Street, and it was approximately in back. It sounds to me like it was in back of the Washington Hose Company, Fire Company Number 3, which is now the Chamber of Commerce building. And in the back there was a place called Marketplace, and I think the church began there. And then they moved up to where they are now, and it probably was there, I would guess, 75 years, maybe more, and I don't know the history, the exact history. But to talk about the Mount Carmel Church, yes, as Rob said, it was built by the immigrants from Italy. And before the church was built, most of them went to St. Mary's, because St. Mary's is a big church and almost a cathedral. And then they wanted to build their own church, and they wanted to have their own masses in Italian, in the vernacular. So they decided to go to their own church and build their own church. And then they built the one in Market Street, and they moved up to 2nd Street. Without a doubt, the center of the Italian population and the Italian community, Italian culture, was the Mount Carmel Church. Hudson was divided back then into different sections, and the Italian section was basically from 3rd Street to the river, down west of the river, and the south of Hudson. So it was basically the first ward. So that's where and almost everyone in that area was of Italian descent, including both sets of grandparents. And we all went to Mount Carmel Church, and they had a lot of things going on. Not only did we have our religious instructions on Tuesday afternoons when we got out of school, but we had an 8 o'clock mass, a 9 o'clock mass, and an 11 o'clock mass. This is when we first started, as far back as I remember. And it goes, we didn't have a Saturday mass back then. Eventually we did have a Saturday mass because it just became so popular and so convenient. What I remember, I do not remember Italian masses. I do remember the Latin mass, okay? But I don't remember masses being said in Italian, but I know the Italian was spoken quite a bit. The actual mass was in Latin, but the other things were said I think the 8 o'clock mass, if I remember, was the Italian mass. And the church, like I said, was the center of everything. They had functions there all the time. They had a kitchen down in the basement. And we had banquets. And they had a Holy Name Society. And they had a society. It was a men's group and a ladies' group. The Holy Name Society was the ladies' group. And I may be wrong, because it's been 20-some years, maybe it's been 30 years since the church is closed. And I'll talk about that in a minute. We used to have a feast for Our Lady of Mount Carmel, which was around the August. Let me think if I remember that too. The feast was in July. The feast was in July. It's the feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And they would have a 3-day feast. They would actually close off the street. They'd close off 2nd Street, and they'd close off part of Union Street around the church, and they'd have booths put up with food and games of chance and religious artifacts, a lot of religious stuff. And even in the basement, they had a little gambling going on in the basement. And we weren't allowed to go there, of course. until we got a little bit older. And it was just a simple game, but it was a gambling game. Nobody bothered us. It was a good time. And on the last day, well, of course, we would have a mass. And then on the last day, the last evening, we would have fireworks down at that area. Right, they would do the fireworks from about less than half a block away. And it was a big time. And it was a big time. We all of us Italians, received our first, were baptized there, received our first communion. We were confirmed there. We were married there. And while the church was still there, they were buried there. People were buried there. All the Italians were buried there. And so, you know, that was it. That was the center of our area. That was it. That's where our life was devoted to that church. And we gave our money to the church, and Mount Carmel was run by the Franciscans. We weren't a diocesan church. So our priest came from St. Francis, yes, a Franciscan, from the Franciscans, from out of New York City. And the Franciscans wore the brown robes with the white ropes around them, okay? That's how you knew the Franciscans. And they lived in poverty. So everything that was done in the church was done by the parishioners. Whether it was washing the floor or cooking the food or putting on a roof, the parishioners did it. And then we saved a lot of money. So now we had this great life, you know, where the center of our community was the Mount Carmel Church. Right on 2nd Street, on the other end of 2nd Street, on the north end of 2nd Street was the Polish Church. It was the, not Holy Family, it was the Sacred Heart. Sacred Heart Church, and that was the Polish Church. Okay? And fast forward about 1986, and we received word from the bishop. Let's go back that the priest from the Polish Church passed away, Father Pulcher passed away. And the Polish Church was a diocesan church, and they did not have a priest for the Polish Church, the Sacred Heart. And so the bishop sent down word that he was closing both Mount Carmel Church and Sacred Heart Church. Now that was devastating to us. The even thought of that was devastating to us. We had put all our money into that. We probably had, at that point, we had the church, we had the rectory next door, two doors up we had a parking lot, and across the street we had a parking lot. Our property was probably, in that day, probably worth about $300,000 or $400,000. Today it's probably worth about $1 million, all that property. And plus we had something like $200,000 in the bank. So we did not have a problem financially. Our structures were sound. We had a priest from the Franciscans, and they said that they would still give us their priests. But we fought hard. In fact, we actually went to Rome. We had a group that went to Rome and spoke to a representative of the Pope to try to keep our church open. It was difficult because we were fighting two battles at the same time. We were fighting the battle for the Sacred Heart Church, and we were fighting the battle for our own church. Sacred Heart Church was a little bit different. They didn't have the money we had. Their church was not in as good a shape as ours was, and they also were diocesan priests, and they said they didn't have any priests, so that was a problem. But we stuck together, and the bishop did not back down. That was a bishop. Isn't that funny? I forgot.
Hubbard.
Howard Hubbard, and I was on that committee, to try to keep our church open. We tried a lot of different things. We gave a lot of different options that they could use. One example was keep one of the two small churches open, and we could use that for daily masses and for small events, and keep the large church open for Sunday services, and we can all go there. That was not accepted. Of course, we wanted to keep our church open. And lo and behold, what happened is they closed our church. And the last mass was very sad. And I think me or my son were the last two people to get communion at that church on that last mass. And it was a sad day, and We Italians, it hurt us tremendously because we did not have that central strong bond anymore. And people went all over the place. Okay, some people went to St. Mary's. Some people went to Stavia. Some people went to Catskill, to the monastery in Catskill. Some people started their own church, and they called it the Concerned Catholics. And they found that the only way that they could continue a church, was not to be under the bishop. So they found if they offered a Latin Mass, they did not have to be under the bishop. And they had a priest who did it in Latin, and I forgot what the terms were, but they were very, very conservative. They were very conservative. And they opened up their church, which is currently up in front of Walmart on Route 9 in Hudson, and it's been there for all these years. But their population has dwindled, and they never did get a huge, huge group from Carmel. Some people just didn't go to church anymore. Some people went to Stottville. It was devastating for us.
Where is the Italian community? Is it all dispersed now?
Well, what happened is the Italian community started, just like every other city, okay, they started to go to the suburbs. So now they went to the Greenport. A lot of them go to Greenport. In fact, I live in Greenport now, not in Hudson. Okay, I moved out of Hudson 6 years ago, and I live in Greenport. But we still consider, we all consider it Hudson, but officially I'm in Greenport. And that's what happened, but it happened in every city. Town, don't forget, what we know of Hudson right now is not the Hudson that I grew up with. And downtown went through, first it was the center, and it was very neat, very clean. And then we had, when the people, and not only the Italians, but the Polish on the other side of the city, when we start moving out, they start moving out, okay, then we had the same problems with any other city, whether it's large or small. And the drugs were huge. I worked in a correction facility, and I saw it firsthand with the men who would, not even men, they were young men, who would come to the correctional facility because they found that it was a lot easier for them to sell drugs and earn money than to go out and get a job. A lot of them, too many of them. So, and now, then what happened is we have a new flux of people coming in, probably about 20 years ago, and again, I would guess 20 years ago, a new group of people came in, and the city started to clean up, and the city's property values have increased. And probably the biggest thing is, and I think everybody would agree, was when 9/11. When 9/11 happened, a lot of people from the city came up here, they looked around, they saw a house for $50,000. Three bedrooms, two baths, and I'm talking about right in the middle of, right where I was growing up, right in that downtown, the first ward of Hudson. Okay? And what I saw was the house that old Mrs. Gentile lived in. What they saw was a mansion. Okay, and they would go in and they would fix it up. They fix it up. They put another $50,000 into it. They got this beautiful home for only $100,000. Okay, when you're living in New York City, that's pretty cheap. And then they were only 2 hours away from the city through the train station was the big thing. So that area that I grew up in is now, and that whole Warren Street area is now a popular area. And there's good and bad about it. The good is there's no doubt the city is beautiful. It's cleaner. The bad is that too many times the newer people, don't really listen to us. They don't know the history of Hudson. They didn't live the history of Hudson. They may have read about it, but they didn't live the history of Hudson. And many, many times they look down on us and just feel that, to be very blunt, feel we're stupid, okay? And I'll give you an example. I went to a place to get a cup of coffee, and I asked for a decaf coffee, and this person said, well, we don't have any decaf coffee, but we do have decaf espresso. I said, okay, I'll have one of those. And he says, that's the small cup of coffee. And I said to myself, why are you talking down to me? Of course I know that, So that's just a small example of how, and there was nothing meant about that. They probably thought they were being helpful, but come on. So, and that happens a lot, and you see it in the government. Hudson now has changed tremendously. We have a whole, you know, it's totally different. It's totally different. Good? Yep. Bad? Some. But, you know, but the Hudson is, as we all know, a lot of people come to Hudson. A lot of people come to Hudson on a weekly basis and to live. So Hudson's a new city. It's a new city.
Well, Phil, that that's, you know, this is a great, you did a great way of explaining from your perspective growing up. And you said that the ward was down, did it go down to Front Street?
Yes, including Front Street. Yeah. Front Street was the first ward in Hudson, it used to be, and they just changed it 2 years ago, was 3rd Street, Warren Street South, and 3rd Street West. So that one corner of Hudson is the first ward. And the second ward was right across from that. 3rd Street North, 3rd Street West, and Warren Street North. Okay. And that was really, that's where the Italian and the Polish community lived. And by the way, we were friends with everyone. We were friends with everyone. I mean, it was to have African-American or to have a, we grew up, we young adults, kids, grew up at a place called the Boys Club, which is still there. Now, if you know, I was talking about 229, 231 Warren Street. Well, it's right around the corner. Go there every night. Play and play basketball, learn how to play pool, just a ton of things, boxing, weightlifting, a ton of things. And not only that, but that's how we got to meet people. And so we not only knew of our Italians, obviously we all knew our Italians, we were all basically related, okay? And not only did we know them, but then we grew up at the Boys Club. So when I went to Allen Street School, which is right down in that first ward, I went there. People from the second ward went to Charles Williams School. And we would all be at the Boys Club. And when we went to, when we all got together at the 4th Street School, we all knew each other. And the junior high school and high school. And we were all athletes and friends. Right. Joe D'Onofrio lived, I have to think now. Well, his father owned a bar called Jen's or Generino's, okay, which was, I was at 229 Warren Street, he was at 252 Warren Street. So just up the block,
yeah.
You know. So and right around the corner was the Boys Club, and many times there were a couple. There were two hot dog stands. Now we're talking about the 50s and mid 50s to mid 60s, mm. And there were two hot dog joints that opened up. Johnny Ware's opened up at about probably they opened up at 8 o'clock at night.
And where was that? Because that's famous for their.
Yes, you know we're. It's where the corner of Prison Alley and 3rd Street. The restaurant there is the new one with the game, and that's, they were in that area, right across from the Boys Club.
Okay.
So we'd come home, and for 15 cents, we got a regular size hot dog, and for, I think it was 20 cents, we get a regular size hot dog. For 35 cents, we get the footlong hot dog.
I heard they had a sauce that, and, mystery.
They put the mystery sauce on it, yes. And that was Jen's or Johnny Ware's was an institution, and if you went right around the corner, Jen's father, Miss Generino, mm-hmm. He sold hot dogs in an onion sauce, and that was very good, and a steamed roll, and they were good. But the whole area, I mean, if you go right down the street, there were all Italian stores, Piro's, with Nettie Piro and her family ran Piro's, and you know, and then Morell's, and the Pericas, you know, they were, and the Graziano's.
Is this going, heading down?
Yep, if you started on 3rd and Warren, corner of 3rd and Warren, okay, mm-hmm. There was a drugstore there, right below the drugstore there was Jen's, okay, and if you go down another three or four place, the houses, there was Piro's store, a little Italian store.
Could I ask you, when you're going down, is it on the left or right side?
Left.
Left side.
Yep.
This okay.
The south side.
South yep. Warren.
And by the way, both sides of Warren. Yeah. Of Warren Street at that point were. And then if you go down a little bit further, you had Dominic Morell owned a little luncheonette. And you go down, and then it was, that was, if we were 229, they were 231, they had to be 233. Okay? And next to us was the Paramount Grill. So at 227, 225, 227 was the Paramount
Grill.
Was
Tansy's somebody else?
And Tansy's was the pool hall.
Oh, it was the pool hall.
Okay, that's where you, that's where we learned life, in the pool hall. That's how we learned. When I went to college, I knew about stuff.
You could show us some.
I knew about stuff. So we learned life at the pool hall. And if you go down a little bit further, there was the General Worth Hotel, and that's where Ackerman's is now. And that was a huge hotel, and it was I probably was only in it twice in my life, in the front, because I was a kid. And they knocked it down. I would probably say I had to be 20-ish when they knocked it down, okay? Because when I was 16, 17, it was still up. But what I remember about the General Worth is, as during the summer, we would go to the, I told you there was a lot, Mount Carmel Church owned a lot. Well, we would go there and play wiffle ball. The Apicella boys and the guy named Steve Gordio and me and Dave Pollack and all these people. And we would play wiffle ball all day. And when we got tired and thirsty, we would sneak in back of the General Worth Hotel, and they had a wishing well. And we'd grab a dime out of the wishing well and run down and get a soda. That's probably about once a week we did that. We weren't that bad at kids.
So, wasn't there, must have been little markets.
They were all little markets.
Were they
Pirro's? Pirro's was a little Italian market.
Yeah, okay.
You know, Perica's was more like a soda fountain. It was a general store soda fountain. And then now if you went, let's go to the other side of the street. There was a Charlie Poppity's owned right on the corner. So we're talking about the corner of 3rd, South 3rd and Warren Street. Okay, they're redoing it right now. Charlie Poppity's had a bar there. And what they were known for in their day was, after you were out for the night, you'd go to Charlie Poppity's. If you didn't go to Johnny Ware's to get a hot dog, you didn't go to Jen's to get a hot dog, you went to Charlie Poppity's and got pasta fazool. You know, we're talking about, 1-2 o'clock in the morning. And then you go down a little bit further, and we had the Steiner's. There's only, I think, two places that are still on Warren Street that were on Warren Street. One is Steiner's, and the other is Rogerson's. The rest are all gone. And Steiner's was there, then had there was a bowling alley upstairs, and they had a fire, and probably in the 50s, and the place burnt down, and they moved to their current location. They've been there ever since. If you go down a little bit further, there was Frank Finn. Now, Finn, that's an interesting name. If you hear the name Finn, you would probably think that it's an Irish name. But somewhere along the line, the name Paladucci got changed to Finn. Hmm. So his name was really Frank Paladucci, but their name became Finn, and he was now Frank Finn. And he owned a barber shop there. And then down a little bit further, there was a tailor. Now the tailor was Polish, okay? And then down a little bit further than that is a place called the Howard Hotel. Now the Howard Hotel is where they've been working on lately. It was Savoia. Okay, let's go back. Jen sold out to actually my uncle, and he made it the Savoia.
Your uncle was the?
He was the of Savoia, okay, at 252 Warren Street. Mm-hmm. My uncle sold it, and then he sold to the Kondowich family, okay, and the Savoia is, I can't think of their last names now, I can see them too, but they bought it, and they kept the Savoia, and then they moved across the street, and then they just sold it to whomever, I don't even know who bought it, but they're fixing it up. But that used to be an interesting place, because not only was it a bar on one side and had rooms upstairs, but they used to have girls dancing there. It was almost like a men's joint. We couldn't go down there. Our parents wouldn't let us go down there. It was a good life. We had a good life, all of us. Like I said, we didn't know we were poor until we went to college, and we met people from Long Island and down the city, and to them, the father would give them $100, and I'm saying, oh my gosh, $100. You know, my father gave me five, and I was happy. I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. But
Phil, I want to thank you so much, Philip Abitabel, who's been active your life in Hudson.
Yeah.
And you're still here.
I'm still here.